This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
Our second guest today almost needs no introduction whatsoever. He is a national, and it, no, that's not fair. He's an international institution all by himself, Peter Dirk Ace. He's a playwright. He is a social commentator. He's an activist. He's an actor. He is a masterful impressionist. And my association with him goes back to the late 1980s, and I've watched him tackle a government. I've watched him tackle a second government. I've watched him tackle a national, indeed an international crisis. And he has graciously given us a few minutes. He's opening a show again in Darling, down in the Western Cape. Peter Dirk, thank you for joining us. I'm sorry it took a little while to get through with in connectivity. I hope you're well.
Thank you. Thank you. Listening to my introduction from you, I just keep on thinking, who are you talking about?
Oh, you know who I'm talking about. The first time I saw you, this goes back to the 1980s, when you did your stand-up act and you stood there on stage with one spotlight, and you held a legitimate copy of the Hansard, and you would read about all the people who had managed to change their racial identification. Six Indians became Chinese, two Africans became white,
That's right.
And one white person became colored. And then you would pause and you say, I'm not making this up, you know.
And, you know, I still read that list in my show now. I still read that list just to remind people how crazy we were and how shocking it was to realize that so many hundreds of thousands of people were having to go through that awful, awful millstream of fear. I tell you, it was Helen Suzman used to demand an answer to the question in Parliament every year. And thanks to her, the media took the information and informed us, the people, which was a very important moment.
And there's another story which I'm going to make it very, very brief, in which you were doing a play and then you didn't have a script, because if you had a script, then the censor board could get a hold of it and loop and red pencil lines. So you didn't bother to put a printed script together. You just did the event, thereby frustrating the authorities. But you're on a new, that's not right. You're on a continuing quest to point to fallacies and I'm trying to find the right words, but you're opening again on Saturday and Sunday in Darling, an audience with Peter Dirkis, am I right?
On Saturday, which is tomorrow, I have Evita at 90. She, Evita is now 90, which is great. She's also going to be 10 years older than me. And then on Sunday, I have Tani Evita Prat Cactus, which is a show that started its life at Evita Siperon 30 years ago, and it's still there. Mm. It's the Evita's version of Afrikaans history, which sort of has a tongue firmly in the cheek of the audience. And then, of course, an audience with Peter Dirk Ace is where I have the 10 boxes on stage with numbers on, and the audience chooses a number, and I do for them what's in the box. It's like a pick-a-box show. So that's every weekend. So that's my therapy every weekend, just to get onto the stage here in Darling and entertain.
That business with the boxes, that's a real high wire act, because you have to shape shift your way to whatever gets the most call outs, and just become whatever you just mentally you have to shift gears 8-9 different times.
But it's a wonderful, yes, it is. It's a huge challenge, because the audience will choose the character. And then I have to weave that character into the fabric of the performance. which means every performance is different because there are different characters, and sometimes you won't even have Evita in the show, and sometimes you're lucky enough to have Donald Trump in the show.
Oh, I was going to show you my, but it's a shame. We're only connected to you by phone. I have the perfect small prop for radio with Donald Trump. It's my Donald Trump head in the as a stress ball. And if I get really angry with that man, I squeeze and he goes from a look to a frown. One of the things that has been remarkable about your on-stage appearances, you have what has to be referred to as an enormously plastic face. You can morph yourself from P.W. Botha to Winnie Mandela to somebody else within a second or two, It takes the audience longer to catch up to what you've done than it takes for you to do it sometimes.
Well, I think the important thing is I'm on stage in front of an audience, and I allow them to watch me change, meaning I go from one costume to another costume, but also I go from a middle-aged white man into an old-aged black man into a Archbishop, and it's part of the theatrical magic. I mean, that's what makes people really enjoy themselves when they suddenly see it happening on stage. So I don't leave the stage and hide behind a curtain. Everything you see is what you get, and that's still the most important part of the show.
Yeah, there's always this moment of recognition that ripples through an audience. They go, "Oh, is that who he's doing now? Oh my goodness, look at that." And I mean that's always been for me one of the hallmarks of your live stage presence, that ability to shape shift your way through the characters but keep your narrative going. Now, over the years, you took on, I mean, I guess we'd have to call them crusades on HIV and AIDS, on the gender-based violence. Are you doing new things, or is this still something that you have to pay close attention to? How do you see your role in those areas?
Well, it's extraordinary. You were mentioning the HIV/AIDS situation. The irony is that one has to go back into the schools with stories to alert the young people of 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids that the virus is still out there, the HIV virus is still out there. There are some wonderful, extraordinary ways of controlling the virus through medication, but the medication costs money. And unfortunately, a huge amount of income, a huge amount of financial aid to fight AIDS has been cancelled by America. We don't get the help anymore. So it's very important to go back to the schools and say to the kids, put your love in a plastic bag. But you see, the most important thing is it's not a lecture, and it's not giving the kids a finger wag. It's entertainment to help them to laugh at their fear. You know, I've always believed that there are two things that I have to juggle with. The one is comedy, and the other one is humor. Comedy is the joke, which always is great to do. Very often I can't remember jokes. I always start with a punchline, which doesn't really help. But laughing at fear is humor. Laughing at things you don't want to think about, laughing at things you don't understand. The danger is looking away from that reality, which makes that reality win because it becomes much bigger than you expected. And I keep on saying, once you have your eye on your fear, that fear will always be smaller than you. So don't be frightened of laughing at fear because it makes your fear less fearful.
Peter, Dirk, I have to take a station break. I have to do commercial message. Just with me. Don't go away.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are back for our final minutes. Apologies that we had that technical glitch at the beginning of our conversation with Peter Dirk-Ace, but he's on the phone line with us now, and we've been talking about the way in which he is using humor with a barb, obviously, but also as an educational tool to deal with a disease which is been bludgeoned a bit, but is still every bit out there and still catches the unwary, the unprepared, or the unwilling to pay attention. Peter Dirk, you're coming to Johannesburg at some point in this year, obviously. What's on your schedule for here?
Well, my biggest problem is that there are just too many things that I've got in my in tray. I mean, I keep on getting new ideas, getting new titles for new shows. But the main project at the moment is I am completing Evita Bessena's autobiography, which takes me through her life from 1935 till now. And it has been an extraordinary experience just trying to keep away from the obvious. Do you know what I mean? There are so many obvious jokes that one can actually talk about, politically speaking. So I have to get all the correct information, meaning lots of research, and then weave Evita's life and her way of speaking into the stories. And I'm finding it fascinating, and it is probably one of the most difficult things I've ever done. So that will take up most of my year. First of all, doing it in English and then doing it in Afrikaans as well. So my weekends are on the stage here in Darling at Evita Se Peron, and during the week, I'm back to Mrs. Bessena's realities.
I mean, is doing a biography or an autobiography of someone who exists in the mind, is that harder than the memoir you did of your own life a couple of few years ago, talked about?
You know, just because Evita doesn't exist doesn't mean she's not real. She has a reality which is very, very, very catching. People actually really believe that she is there, and it's very important for me to actually also join in the fun, but really not add noughts for effect. I mean, I must stick to the truth. The truth, especially during the apartheid years, was the truth was shocking enough. Going back to that list that you read earlier on. So that's mainly something that I'm working on this year. And she's now in her 90th year, by the way, and she's always going to be 10 years older than me. So that gives me a smile on my face as well.
Peter Dirk, I really am sad about this. We lost that vital 8 minutes, and we're going to have to make way for the next program in just a minute. But if I could let you wrap up by saying what you look for in a positive way for this year that we have just entered, the year 2026, what would you point to? What are the green shoots? What are the hopeful signs that you look at?
Well, it was a new year a few weeks ago, and I decided that in the past, my year has been 25 days a year. Now my year has got 2 days, today and tomorrow. So really, truly focusing on the moment is so important that you don't actually have to have too much fear on your plate, because frankly, when you switch on television, the news is so frightening that I think people lose hope. And I am an optimist, and I really think that especially in South Africa, we have got tremendous possibilities of making things better. I mean, let us make community the jewel in the crown of democracy. So my middle name is optimism, and I think that's what I march with: optimism and hope.
Yeah, Peter Derkes, the perennial optimist, going into a dark room looking for a black cat with no flashlight. You have found the light in some terrible times. It's been a pleasure, an honor, privilege to speak with you yet again. Today's deep dive gave us two Peters. We had Peter Fabricius first up talking about the naval exercise in Cape Town, and then Peter Derkes telling us what he's doing now, and he's working on Evita Bezadenhut's biography, 90 years old woman. She's seen a lot and done a lot. Peter, again, thanks very much. We'll speak soon, I hope. And if I'm down in Cape Town again, I hope to be able to get out to Darling to see you. I hope so. Thank you very much. This has been The Deep Dive. Your host, Brooke Spector, will be back again next week at our regular time on Friday mornings at 9 o'clock. You all have a good weekend. Be safe. Be careful. Talk to you again next week.